Why did Frederick III risk his realm of Saxony to protect Martin Luther and the developing reforms of the church? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is Frederick the Wise, Seen and Unseen Lives of Martin Luther's Protector. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Frederick the Wise by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, Frederick the Wise.
Bruce Jenner is, I would say I've always been very confused with my gender identity since I was this big. Bruce, always telling a lie. He's lived a lie his whole life about who he is. And I can't do that any longer. Yes, for all intents and purposes, I am a woman. People look at me differently. They see you as this macho male. But my heart and my soul and everything that I do in life, it is part of me. That female side is part of me. That's who I am.
That is famous Olympic athlete Bruce Jenner from an ABC News interview with Diane Sawyer, probably one of the most watched ABC News interviews in recent history, talking about what is called gender dysphoria. It's a teary-eyed interview. He is obviously a man who has struggled his entire life and continues to struggle with the idea in his mind that he ought to be a woman, even though he readily acknowledges that biologically, genetically, he is a man. Well, he's working, at least as far as we can tell, he's working toward fixing that, making himself a woman in every sense that he physically or psychologically can. The subject of transgenderism was one that used to be just kind of the fodder for Snickers or something like that, but now is, well, it's taken seriously psychologically. How do we deal with this? How do we deal with someone who says, with tears in their eyes, that they've struggled their entire life believing that they are not the gender they were born as? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about this and some ethical concerns, some big ethical concerns about in vitro fertilization, Pastor Scott Stiegelmeyer. He's pastor of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Elmhurst, Illinois, host of a podcast called Christ and Culture. He'll be installed in June as an assistant professor of bioethics and theology at Concordia University, Irvine, California. Scott, welcome back.
Hey, Todd. It's great to be back.
I don't know if you watched the interview, but you can't help but sympathize with the man emotionally who is obviously, this is hard for him. This is very difficult for him. The pain is very evident on his face and in his description of how he's lived his entire life. How do we as Christians offer sympathy, sympathize with someone who believes themselves to be misgendered, so to speak, without affirming that idea?
Yeah, it's a tough one for sure. And I have spoken with people who are transgendered or people that have gender dysphoria, which you mentioned in your intro. And I've also talked to family members of such folks. And the first thing you want to notice and acknowledge is that they are suffering. I mean, there is real emotional, psychological pain that they're experiencing. So, you know, it isn't something really for the butt of jokes. You know, it really is a serious, I would consider it a disorder. I think there's an illness here, mental illness. But, you know, it isn't funny. The culture has tended to kind of make it a occasion for laughter, but that's sort of changing. We as biblical Christians, we don't have to affirm someone in their mental illness in order to find compassion in our hearts for them. And so that would be my first reaction is to, look, let's show compassion to people who are experiencing this because their suffering is real. From their vantage point, they are truly undergoing. This isn't just a whim. You know, no one undertakes the kind of scrutiny and the kinds of persecution, if you might, that they will receive for becoming transgender. Nobody undertakes that lightly. They're obviously trying to alleviate some kind of great pain in their lives.
Now, one of the things that, and I don't want to be, you know, too clinical about this in a theological sense, but it struck me as I was watching the Bruce Jenner interview with Diane Sawyer that this is a man who firmly believes there's a difference between male and female.
Right.
He believes that with all his heart. In fact, that is the source of his angst. And it struck me, you know, the devil has a he's so clever in being able to take the kernel of truth and twisting it that way, because there is a difference between male and female in a culture that says there isn't, that it continually screams at us, there's no difference between male and female. There's Bruce Jenner saying, as he attempts to transition from being male to female, saying, yes, there is, and it's killing me.
Yeah, it's ironic, isn't it? You know, I mean, the devil is very crafty, because he will use different types of deception in different situations. And so on the one hand, we agree, you know, the Bible says that God created man, male and female. Okay, he created them. We believe in the binary nature of humanity, male and female. And yeah, I do think it's one of the deceptions of our time to try to blur those distinctions and make it as if there's such a thing as a generic human. But you know, but at the same time, he's got someone like a Bruce Jenner who will acknowledge, yeah, there's a difference between male and female, and I'm the wrong one. You know, what he's experiencing is an incongruity between his mind and his body, and he would say that in his mind he's a woman. He has the brain of a woman trapped inside the exterior of a man, and this incongruity is the source of the pain. So the devil use whatever he can, whatever technique he can, whatever lie he can use to try to suck people into a renunciation of the creation. You know, it comes back to the first article. We believe that God's the creator of all things, so many heresies are about renouncing the goodness of creation, and this is just one example.
It is a problem that is, I don't know, because I'm not a psychologist or an expert in psychiatry, but I look at it and I think it's a fair judgment, Scott, to say that this is a problem, as with other disorders of this nature, like homosexuality and the whole spectrum here, intractable. In most cases, humanly speaking, an intractable disorder. I just don't honestly believe that anyone would be able, by any means necessarily divine, apart from divine intervention, to convince Bruce Jenner that he's a man.
Oh, absolutely. And all the cases, not just him, but you know, this is true across the board. People with gender dysphoria are experiencing a severe and intense sense of being in the wrong body. It is not just simply a matter of persuasion and just simply kind of convincing them, if you will, in an intellectual way. Many times they have struggled against this. You know, usually people, because of society pressure and so on, and their family, because usually these sorts of things begin to manifest very early in life when we're talking about small children. They're already starting to want to behave and be identified with the opposite sex. And so, you know, moms and dads might entertain that as cute for a little while, but then they begin to want to try and pressure their children to behave in more gender normative ways. And no one would undertake this unless there was something strong, some internal impulse that was very, very strong pushing them. And we have to recognize that. And we also have to recognize that all forms of psychotherapy, because these people will go through therapy, these people will seek to get medicated, all forms of psychotherapy and all forms of psychiatric medication are ineffective for this particular disorder. That's why people are pushed to the extreme measure of having what we would consider a drastic and irreversible surgery in order to feel better, because they think it will.
That's the other tough question here, and that is, let's just say we give Bruce Jenner another 3 years. He's got a lot of money. He's got, you know, he's going to have the support of the culture and of pop culture and of the media and everything, and he decides, you know, now he makes the transition surgically, and he can live or pass, I guess we could say, as a woman, and the general society will affirm him in that. They'll change the pronouns from he to she. He might change his name. All those kinds of things can happen. Has he, and maybe he even feels better, Scott.
Yeah.
Has the problem been solved?
No, I think ultimately it's just adding problems, because there are complications with surgery of any kind, especially something this drastic. There are various health issues, and the data, you know, not just to be arguing from a social science perspective, but we can, The data is inconclusive. You know, there are certainly people, and we have to be honest with the facts. There are certainly people who claim to feel much better after the surgery and to feel more functional and appear to be more functional, and not crippled by depression and by this feeling of unease. But how extensive or how good the surgery is at making people feel better is very inconclusive. There's been data, there's been studies. University of Birmingham did a major meta study where they looked at a lot of other studies on how do post-operative transsexuals report. Do they feel like their symptoms have been alleviated? And the data is very inconclusive. That's what we can say. So will he feel better? I don't know. I think there's a good chance he won't. And not that that's our only argument or the only thing that matters, whether or not it works, quote-unquote. But, you know, I think we need hopefully he is receiving that information and is hearing that, you know what, there's a lot of postoperative transsexuals that feel just as depressed and have feelings and thoughts of suicide. And, you know, we can always blame society, and we can always say, well, that's because as much quote-unquote progress as society has made, there's still going to be discrimination. I don't know. I don't know if that's really the source of the pain, or if what I think is happening is that a person has a view of their body that does not comport to their objective body, and having the surgery is perhaps going to alleviate that to some extent, but it's just going to also bring new problems too.
Scott Stiegemeyer is our guest. He's host of a podcast called Christ and Culture. He's pastor of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Elmhurst, Illinois, soon to be assistant professor of bioethics and theology at Concordia University, Irvine, California. When we come back, we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk about a pressing ethical concern, very pressing ethical concern, in vitro fertilization, and a big question about what to do with embryos that are produced in the process and then put on ice, literally. We'll be right back.
I just find it fascinating that so many of the issues that are out there right now are based on this false notion that men and women are completely interchangeable.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway talking about her presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
I mean, all these really hot button issues are based on some confusion about where men and women are equal, in what terms are they equal, and then, you know, most importantly, how are we different, and is that difference a bad thing? Is it a good thing? You know, what does God have to say about these differences, and, you know, how should the Christian think about these differences? So I am so excited to come to this conference and talk about these issues, which animate so much of our political and social and cultural discourse, and also the things we struggle with in the church as well.
You can meet and hear Molly Ziegler-Hemingway making the case for the differences between men and women June 19th and 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about two issues, transgenderism and then, in just a minute, in vitro fertilization and the suite of ethical concerns that go along with that kind of science and reproductive science. Scott Stiegemeyer is our guest. He's host of a podcast called Christ and Culture. You'll find a link to it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. It focuses mostly on bioethical and ethical concerns. Scott, I got one more question on the transgenderism issue, and that is, look, you're confronted with someone who is either on their way toward transitioning, that's their intent, they're in the middle of it, or perhaps they've achieved it as far as they can surgically and chemically. They've achieved it. What is the church's message to this person?
Yeah, that's a great challenge because it's going to be very difficult. But we do need to face this. There are going to be. It's rare. First of all, this is rare, but it's not so rare that you're not going to ever run into it in your ministry, especially these days. I think we have to be compassionate to someone who, especially if they've gone through the procedure and perhaps are feeling regret, or they've gone through the procedures and still feel unhappy, and they don't know what the source of that unhappiness or unfulfillment is. And they can be just very miserable, and the suicide rate is very high for these folks. And I think as the church, we need to be able to be a sanctuary of grace and mercy. And yeah, they may look unusual to us, and we're going to have to be comfortable as congregations with all sorts of people, with all of our problems. So that, I mean, you know, that we just have to be focusing on the grace and mercy. If someone is undergoing or contemplating, I think we have to walk alongside them and listen, understand that they are simply, you know, we do things, if we're in a lot of pain, if you were in a lot of physical pain, you might do something that you would otherwise not do in order to alleviate that pain. And if you're going through kind of a psychological pain, as these people are, they might do things that rationally they might feel, you know, they might agree is not the right way. And just try to walk alongside these people and let them know that they're not abandoned.
To the subject of in vitro fertilization, just describe for us briefly what we're really talking about here, because it's usually just, you know, a bunch of very complicated medical procedures that no one hopes to understand on the lay side of the equation. What is IVF?
Well, IVF used to be what we would call test tube babies. IVF simply is the fertilization of an egg with a sperm outside the woman's body. It literally means in vitro, means in glass, so in a test tube or in a petri dish. The eggs are culled from the woman. She's usually given some kind of medication in advance to cause her to ovulate more than one egg a month. And then they take those eggs, and if they're healthy, and then they put them in a scenario where the sperm will fertilize them. And usually there's multiple embryos formed from that. And they will attempt to implant up to three of them, I think is usually the case. And maybe only one of them, or two or three at the most. There could be multiple pregnancies result. But then you most likely have additional embryos that are not used. And what is to occur there? Well, for one thing, when a woman goes through the cycle of this treatment, it's only effective, I think, about 25% of the time or 30% of the time. So she might have to do it again. She might have to go through it again, and maybe then the second time she can use some of those surplus embryos. But what frequently occurs is that a woman either doesn't want to go through the cycle again, or they can't afford to because it's very expensive, or maybe she had a successful pregnancy and gave birth. So you have these so-called surplus embryos that are literally frozen and saved for use later on, and there's a lot of debate whether these should be used for scientific research. What should we do with these surplus embryos? It's kind of draconian when you think about it. These are human beings that we're freezing and waiting to decide what to do with, and that's what the debate is. That's what a big part of the ethical debate is.
So, I mean, it may not be technologically possible with the same kind of results, but there is. It's not that Christians are opposed to the method that is artificial, insemination outside the womb in principle. But the question is how the human lives that are created in the process are treated. That's the real ethical concern here that is of first caliber.
Well, for me it is. You know, our Roman Catholic friends would object to the whole process. You know, that they would see that the marriage bed is being violated, that you don't want to separate what they call the unitive act or the sexual act from the procreative act. And by separating those things, we have transgressed God's natural order of things. And I think they have a point. I mean, I'm very warm to that point of view. So from a Roman Catholic would object to the whole scenario, even artificial insemination. I don't necessarily have to agree with my Roman Catholic friends on this, but where we do agree is that simply destroying these embryos and thus taking human lives, that is ethically unacceptable.
A question from one of our listeners. My wife and I have listened through a lot of Issues, Etc. shows regarding IVF, embryo adoption, infertility. Maybe there aren't a lot of us, but there are some that have made it to the Lutheran Church after the decision to pursue IVF. We have twin boys that are amazing, truly a gift from God, but their siblings are numerous and very cold in their slumber. And we struggle with what to do next. We are seeking the guidance of our pastor. We would be thrilled to gain as well from the insight of your guest and the conversation you might be able to lead through the topic of what to do with the challenges presented by our frozen babies. With about 2 minutes here, what would be your best pastoral advice?
Well, since we've established that it's not appropriate to simply destroy them or discard them, there really are only other two options, and that is, one is to adopt, put them up for adoption so that another barren or infertile family will be able to take them and hopefully enjoy the children that would be the fruit of that. But what some are saying, and what the Roman Catholic Church, I believe, is their position on this, is not to do that. They think that we should view the frozen embryos as terminally ill patients and thaw them and allow them to die a natural death. So there really are only a finite number of options. My view is that it's probably the most humane thing to do would be to put them up for adoption if that can be done. There are some problems with that. I mean, the argument is that if you do that, you're simply encouraging a bad procedure to continue being done. But I think we're faced with these human lives that are hanging in the balance, and it seems to me the most humane thing to do would be to try to bring them to term.
So with only about a minute here, many cautionary tales of people who are contemplating this to thoroughly explore the ethical concerns of this procedure before going ahead.
Yeah, absolutely, and pray about it. And I think that your listener did the right thing by consulting his pastor, and hopefully they'll hear long gospel and they'll hear about the love of Jesus, and it'll help them guide through this difficult question.
Pastor Scott Stiegemeyer is pastor of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Elmhurst, Illinois. He's host of a podcast called Christ and Culture. He's going to be installed in June as an assistant professor of bioethics and theology at Concordia University, Irvine, California. Scott, thank you very much for being our guest.
Hey, thanks, Todd. It's always a pleasure.
When we come back in hour two of Issues, Etc., we're going to spend some time with an attorney from Chicago, Mark Stern. He recently gave a presentation to the Association of Confessing Lutherans and Luther Academy, Same-Sex Marriage, the Challenge of Its U.S. Legalization for Pastors and Congregations. Well, in some states, same-sex marriage is legal. Depending on what the Supreme Court decides over the next several months, it might be legal nationally. What is the real issue here? Many people have started to be concerned that the real issue here is religious liberty. And when we come back, we're going to explore the possibility that this issue, same-sex marriage, is just one issue of a broader movement that is decidedly anti-Christian, that is decidedly contrary to religious beliefs, ideas, not just expressing them in the public square, but to one holding them. And the kind of totalitarian impulse that inevitably results from this when, well, what you think, what you believe, can be made illegal as well, for all intents and purposes. I'm Todd Wilkin, Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. with Mark Stern, right after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hi, this is Pastor Clayton from Zion Lutheran Church of Muscoota, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues, etc. Zion is a congregation firmly grounded in God's grace given in the Word and Sacraments, where we treasure the timeless beauty of the liturgy. Zion is also a vibrant, young, family-friendly congregation where you would be warmly welcomed. Zion is located at 101 South Railway Street in Muscoota, Illinois, and we would love to share God's gifts of grace with you. For more information, please visit our website at zionmuscoota.com.
Would you like to help a college or seminary student attend the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference? You can purchase a conference scholarship for a donation of $100 to Issues, Etc. To donate online, fill out the registration form at issuesetc.org and insert scholarship in the first name field. Or you can make your $100 check payable to Issues, Etc., write scholarship in the memo line, and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.